Welcome back to Arts About.
The show about art that's a work of art in itself. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, John. It's so wonderful to have you back.
Very nice to see your smiling face over there.
Thank you. Yours as well. We're very glad also to have Brody back from holidays as well, twiddling the knobs, because, of course, we have been at the mercy of Swanee for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's very nice to see the man behind the curtain over there.
Yes, it is indeed.
Isn't that one of the best lines in cinema?
Nice to see the man behind the curtain.
No, but I think in The Wizard of Oz, you know, take no notice of that man behind the curtain. Yes.
Yeah, I was scratching for that reference. Yes, of course, that's a great scene. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClellan Gallery and Sculpture Park, and you're sitting in here with us at the Community Bank Bendigo Bank Studio. Now, John, you've been away for 3 weeks.
Yes.
What have you got for us this one?
Because I was in Sydney, I ended up seeing Grace and Perry. You've seen it as well.
Yes, how fabulous.
Yeah, it's fabulous. So I want to talk a little bit about that, but mixed up with some William Hogarth and the nature of contemporary art these days, particularly installations, and I hope I can sort of get through that without yawning.
Oh, my goodness me. Okay, well, very good. I'll look forward to that. It's not a small
subject. Oh, we're not going to yawn about Grace and Perry.
No good. I have committed a phone studio crime.
Oh, your phone's ringing. Oh, Lord.
That'll be my daughter, Pearl, I suspect. Anyway, it's gone to a message bank. Now, this week, 45 Downstairs are about to run a season of The Merry Wives of Windsor, and friend of the house, director, actor and improv coach Carol Pucciullo is one of the Merry Wives, I think, and so we're going to ring her in a minute and find out the backstory on that. Also, the fabulous eatery in Flinders Lane, Chin Chin, has begun to commission video installations.
Oh.
Yeah, to appease its queuing patrons. And another friend of the show, academic, artist and so much more, Gary Willis, is going to be presenting a work for them called TV Voodoo. And that'll be projected on their nearby laneway wall for the month of April. And I managed to talk to him a little earlier this week, so I will play that interview with him a little later.
That's curious, isn't it, that they're going to... Well, curious or... I'm interested in how they're going to manage, given that... I wonder about whether or not there are laws about visual pollution. Can you just sort of broadcast something onto a wall without making arrangements with the people who own the wall?
Oh, I'm sure you'd have to make arrangements with people, particularly if
or
it was
people
going to be
rented. Or people who are going to have to look at it for innocent reasons?
Well, I don't know. Wouldn't the same laws apply to graffiti?
Yeah, well, you're not allowed to put graffiti on
but
walls.
But people do. Yeah. And I guess it's not permanent, so I don't know. We'll have to find out about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Cliff will be back in the building.
Great.
And so while we get Carol on the line, let's get into the mood with a release from the next forthcoming mini LP from Paul Kelly, 7 Sonnets and a Song. And it's due to be released on an aptly old-fashioned 10-inch vinyl. Digital downloads available from midnight Greenwich Mean Time as April the 22nd ticks over to April the 23rd, the day of Shakespeare's death 400 years ago.
There's Pearl again, Sally.
Carol Pucciullo is starring the very soon-to-open Merry Wives of Windsor, written by the birthday bard William Shakespeare, who, if he were alive today, would be dead 400 years on the 23rd of April. 45 Downstairs are celebrating the event and nothing but roaring at presenting the production. And our very much loved local friend of the show, actor, director and improv coach Carol Pucciullo is playing a merry wife, I think. Is it Mrs. Page or Mrs. Ford, Carol Pucciullo?
Mistress Ford, Sally.
Mistress Ford.
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, I've never seen or even read The Merry Wives of Windsor, but I've read your description on the 45 Downstairs website. Can I read it?
Yes, absolutely.
Two women, two respectable women. Two respectable married women. Two respectable married mischievous and merry women. One man. One fat old man. One fat old down on his luck man. One fat old down on his luck mischievous and merry man. Boom. Who are the merry wives and why? What are they merry about, Carol?
Well, I think they're merry about revenge. because they're both married, reasonably wealthy middle-class women living in Windsor, and Falstaff comes to Windsor to try and get some money. He's low, he's run out of money, so he thinks, I'll seduce these wealthy married women with my charm, and then get their money. Unfortunately, the women get word of this, so they conspire to kind of have a bit of fun and get revenge on Falstaff. And that's what happens, and it is a lot of fun.
I've read that of all Shakespeare's plays, this one depends most upon the quick interaction and choreography of the cast, and that meaning cannot be separated from the performance. Does this mean it's been a particularly gruelling rehearsal?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't been gruelling. It's been a lot of fun, but it is very fast paced, and I think a lot of the humour comes from the misunderstanding. So we've really, you know, I certainly put a lot of work into understanding exactly what's going on, not only for my characters, because I play a man as well. I play Justice Shallow, who's this 80-something-year-old old ex-judge who sort of reminisces constantly about his heyday, you know, and how potent he was when he was a young man, and so there's a lot sort of to understand to get to the humour. So, and because it's so fast paced, I mean, it really is like a farce in that way.
Yes. Well, that leads me to another question. Like, if it's a costume drama, I'd quite like to be seeing the costume changes backstage with you turning into an 80-year-old man and then a middle-aged woman.
Yes.
But is it a costume drama, or is this a set?
Well, we've set it sort of in contemporary Melbourne kind
right.
of time. Yeah. So,
have you set it in Melbourne?
We're sort of, well, this is a bit of a secret, but I'll let you in on it because it's just you I'm talking to.
You've heard it here first, folks.
we've got, in the back of our, the backstory we have is kind of the Geelong area. So it's
right.
kind of like a regional centre, yeah. That's the kind of Windsor. And then, yeah, some of the characters come from some of the other sort of, you know, centres outside Geelong, I suppose, to Geelong.
Mm. Your director, Rob Conkey, is a bit of an authority in the Shakespearean subjects. He's a senior lecturer in theatre and drama at La Trobe University.
Yeah.
Do you know why what made him choose this little-known and rarely performed play for the Bard's birthday bash? I keep calling it a birthday bash, but in fact, actually, it's the anniversary of his death, isn't it? It's hardly to be celebrated.
Yes. I think it was partly that. It's rarely performed. He's seen it a number of times overseas. He is a bit of an aficionado. So I think there was a symposium, because we've performed the play already in Perth at the university there.
Oh,
they have
you?
A beautiful Elizabethan stage called the New Fortune at the university there.
So do
we
they?
We performed there back in the heat in February,
yep.
And there was a kind of world symposium on this play. So there are academics
really?
Out there who specialise in this play, and some of those people were there, and that was amazing, actually. So knowledgeable, and these, you know, amazing women.
Because there are a few sort of intriguing facts about this play. One of them is that it's been suggested that perhaps it had been commissioned by Queen Elizabeth specifically because she was so in love with the Falstaff character,
yes.
wasn't she? Who
yes.
I think who appears in two other plays, doesn't he?
That's right, Henry the Fourth, Part
yes.
One and Two.
Yeah, and she wanted to see. Well, the suggestion is that she wanted to see what would happen with his love interests.
Yes. There is a sort of theory that it was kind of rushed. The play,
Because of course, because I've done a little reading about it. I haven't, as I mentioned before, I've never seen it, and nor even read it. I do believe that there are bits and pieces in it that are not followed up. Like there are leads into particular stories that are never evolved and so on. So it looks as if it is a slightly incomplete work. Would that be right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And I think Rob's done a great job of kind of tidying up some of that. So, you know, this is an edited version of the play. Not in a big way, but there's just some of those sort of areas that he's kind of tidied up a bit, and he's just made it a kind of more efficient version, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And tight. It's tight. It's, yeah.
Now, Nothing But Roaring presents this production. Who's Nothing But Roaring?
I think Nothing But Roaring is his sort of company or name that he's kind of...
Which is a line from Midsummer Night's Dream, isn't it? Or it's reference from that.
Oh, well, you know more than me.
Yeah, I think it is, actually.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Who else is in the cast?
Oh, there's some rippers in the cast. So we've got Tom Considine, James Wardlaw, Helen Hopkins, Alex Pinder, Bernard Callio, Caroline Lee, Ezra Bix, Jinjuan Chan, and Tom Heath. So there's a mixture. It's actually, which is exciting for me, it is an older cast. So a lot of the actors are kind of over 45.
Ah, some good talent there.
Yeah. So and then there's a couple of youngies, which is lovely too. So there's the young lovers, because there is another kind of, you know, there's a few strands to the play, and one of the strands is this young, you know, a kind of young love kind of theme, where there's three suitors trying to take the hand of Mistress Page's daughter, Anne Page. So that's a kind of another plot that's operating, yeah.
Well, of course, so it's a farcical comedy, in case we hadn't got to that for our listeners. It is a fun play.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. And really, you know, I was looking at sort of some of the themes, but it's a lot about women's friendship, I think. And a friend who saw a run early on said that, she said, it's just so much fun to see these strong women and the fun that they have keep seeking revenge on this naughty, lascivious man.
Fat guy.
Fat guy, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Are you going to have a party after the show on the anniversary night?
I think there'll be a bit of a party.
Yeah, of course there will be.
A bit of sack and celebration.
So it's on at 45 Downstairs, opening on, is it April the 19th?
Yes, April the 19th until May the 1st.
Fantastic. And, of course, you can go onto the 45 Downstairs website to get tickets and choose your day. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to consider that even 400 years on, there's still a love for and relevance to Shakespeare's writing, isn't it?
I know. I was saying to someone yesterday, it's just so delicious when you read a line and you go, that line still...
It still makes sense.
It still makes sense now. And we use versions of those lines that he wrote. I mean... Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, actually, in fact, Will, my husband, showed me something the other day. He had printed out a whole lot of sort of platitudes or sayings that we use in everyday speech throughout everything, and so all of them, hundreds of them, have come from Shakespeare.
I know, and they're still relevant. That's the amazing thing. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, what better way to celebrate 400 years of the man than going along to see a production at one of his extraordinary works? You should go onto the website, everybody, 45 Downstairs, and see whether or not you can find yourself a ticket. It sounds fantastic, Carol. Thanks so much for talking to us about it today. I'm going to come along and see it. I'm going to try and come on the birthday day, actually.
Oh, great, great. Well, thank you for having me, Sally.
It's a great pleasure. Good luck.
Cheers.
See you soon. Bye.
And now it's time for John On.
Have you missed it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, thanks for that, Swanee. William Hogarth, I wonder, there's a bit of meandering going to go on here.
Oh, what a surprise. For change, yeah?
And actually, not William Hogarth. I'll start with the Biennale in Sydney.
Yes.
And I spoke a little bit about it from Sydney. Yeah. But particularly, we went out to Cockatoo Island.
Yes.
And Cockatoo...
Do you have to get the ferry to that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had an argument with Will about that, but anyway.
If you had your own boat, you might be able to take your own boat out there. But it's a lovely ferry trip.
Yeah.
All around Balmain and around there. But we went out there, and there's some great old buildings there, of course. That's why they use it for the Biennale. In the main building there was a work from someone whose name I don't know because I didn't even bother to look it up, which was something to do with the Hindenburg Zeppelin, which, you know, crashed into an aerial tower in America. And so what they'd done is built a massive Zeppelin shape and hung it inside this sort of hangar. It was more made out of tin foil, you know, sort of out of the kitchen packet, perhaps. And then spread some curtain-like material or plasticky shower curtain stuff around the building with some printing on it of Hindenburg-type imagery. So it looked like a half-done museum display.
Yeah.
Missing only perhaps the recorded voice of a man going, "Oh, the humanity."
Oh. You know.
But,
I shouldn't laugh. That's terrible.
I didn't get the reference.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was particularly well made. I didn't think it was particularly well thought out. But it did make me wonder what it is about some contemporary artists or some installation artists that gives them a kind of free access into those kinds of spaces where art for a long time was a process where people would sincerely make art.
Mm.
An audience would look at it and reflect upon it. They would decide whether they were fond of it or not. And then a museum as an institution would collect it so that people would have a record, a visual record of what it is that they've been interested in or not over the decades. Whereas this stuff just seems to appear suddenly in a building on Cockatoo Island with none of those sort of decisions being made by a public before it, some decisions being made by a curator. And then they all disappear and no one ever hears of them again.
You know? It's like there's some parallel universe of curators that are deciding upon these things that don't seem to be related
well,
to
Well, all of which would be fine if it wasn't completely tedious.
Right, yeah.
You know? The big, huge German lathes, or Scottish, I think, actually, lathes in the building that were used originally to make submarine drive shafts or something were a lot more interesting than the art.
I bet they were, some of them, yes. Well, I haven't seen it.
So from there we get to like artists like William Hogarth, who completely stepped aside of what was the normal tradition of being an artist. He was rudely described as and taken to court over a painting, and he was described in court as a man who couldn't paint, which must be a terrible thing for an artist
for a
in
painter.
A courtroom.
yes, indeed.
And so he set out to take a slightly different approach, and he more or less invented the image series, so cartoon kind of work, where he would make a sequential series of events that would tell a small story.
Yeah.
The Rake's Progress was one of them, and The Harlot's Progress was another, where they're both stories of doom in London, where people sort of set out to do something and came to grief for one reason or another. And they were immensely popular and much copied, which resulted in his second famous court appearance, which was about making sure that his work couldn't be copied and benefited from, and he more or less invented copyright for the visual arts.
Really? That's so interesting, because of course it had never occurred to me in that context that those drawings of his, or that the images that I have seen of his would be so controversial, I guess, at the time, because even just in their basic form rather than even what the story was
about.
They
certainly were, and they're much loved as well as controversial.
Yeah.
You know, they were loved by people who hated the people who were being lampooned and hated by the people who were being lampooned themselves, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Yes.
So we want to sort of obviously segue all of this into Grayson Perry,
which is whose exhibition is on at the same time in the Museum of Contemporary
and very
Art.
Much a contemporary artist, and with a contemporary artist approach to all of these. I think he has more right to be in a museum than a lot of the other installation artists or contemporary artists that were around at the time, because his practice is one of serious hard work for a start, and often tested against either adoring or I imagine somewhat kind of alarmed public.
Yes.
And His work itself has to do with Hogarth in that he does the same thing. He tells a story. It's a very allegorical-based art, and often the kind of allegory that he's telling is alarming in the extreme, actually. It can be very difficult to cope with at times. But the process as well, that thing where he will take a simple thing like a pot, which is an innocent object in itself, and cover it with an imagery that somehow is subversive to the pot itself. You know, the pot is no longer an innocent vessel.
Well, the layers and layers and layers of ordinary objects, of ordinary stories, juxtaposed with these sort of historical, cultural icons of different kinds is really amazing.
Yeah.
But also... also the kind of the nature of it too, I think, because a lot of it is really sexual or, you know, in the way that Gilbert and George is almost provocatively sexual.
Yeah.
And yet it still is about his ordinary life. It's the things that are inside his head. I didn't know nearly as much about him as I do now. I went along and saw that exhibition. I was just absolutely... mind blown, Swanee.
Yeah.
But those tapestries—they're just something else, aren't they? They're these pictures of the huge, huge, and the referencing of them from, as you mentioned, the Bayeux tapestry and William Morris, then through to almost the soap opera.
Yeah,
you know,
I was getting a little bit of. Robert Crumb out of it as well, you know.
You mentioned Robert Crumb too,
those sort of hippie cartoons from the 60s and 70s. But the tapestries are a fantastic use of technical possibilities these days, you know, because, you know, there are looms that can make those, and it's a fabulous thing when artists sort of recognise the possibility of a new piece of equipment and are able to use it in a way like he has.
Oh, yes, quite. And to having not really known that much about him, I recommend everybody to have a look. The BBC have a series of lectures that he has done, and there's four of them, and he talks about himself in the world of art and so on, and they're just terrific.
Yeah.
But there was some brilliant, brilliant moment, which I think really encapsulated him so beautifully. In one of the lectures, he was asked by a critic, he was told by a critic that the critic was unable to determine whether he was a lovable character or a serious artist. And Perry's response was, "Can I be both?"
Of course.
Which I thought was brilliant. Hey, we better move on. As I mentioned earlier, I had a chat with Dr. Gary. Thanks, John, for that, by the way. I had a chat with Dr. Gary Willis earlier this week about his installation TV Voodoo. So here it is. It's always exciting to have an opportunity to get a friend of the show, Gary Willis, to come in and talk to us. And a great excuse this week because he has an exhibition, he has an installation that's opening up at one of my favourite restaurants in the city, Chin Chin, which is in Flinders Lane. It's called TV Voodoo. And Gary, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi Sally.
What's TV Voodoo?
Nice to be back. Oh gosh, what is TV Voodoo? Well, it will be... let's begin with Chin Chin's. Chin Chin's has a, you would know, they're on Flinders Lane and they've got a little lane beside. You can't book to get into Chin Chin's. If you want to go to Chin Chin's, you just go to the door, and if there's too many people, then you've got to wait.
You've got to wait, yeah.
And then if it's a Friday or Saturday night and there's a lot of people, they all begin sort of waiting and then they begin to spew down the lane a little bit. So I think they've sort of developed an entertainment program. So by projecting from Chin Chin's across the lane at the side, which is one up from ACDC Lane on Hickson Lane. They project straight out the bottom of the window somehow, so they get a two-story projection of video. So they said, excellent idea, let's develop a video program.
Mm. And so it's almost like their own TV channel.
So they've got their own program, and they invite a cross-section of video artists to do shows for a month. So I'm doing this the month of April. So any time during April in the evening, I'm not sure what time it begins, but sort of, you know.
Dark, probably.
Yeah. You don't even have to go there, you can walk down the street, you can be driving down Flinders Lane, and it'll just be projected onto the wall of the building next door in Hickson's Lane.
There's a bit of a history to it, isn't it? Because I believe that you produced some events like this or some films like this in the 80s.
Yes, that's true, Sally. I was sort of making videos from like the late 70s, and TV Voodoo, we were living in the city in those days, in days when very few people actually lived in the city, although there's quite a few artists who lived in there. And late at night, being, you know, deadbeat modern art types, we sort of prowled the street after studio, just trying to wind down before going to bed, etc. And you'd sort of see down the alleyways homeless people, often disturbed, crying, weeping, calling, raving, cursing, swearing into garbage bins and down the backs of lanes and so on. It was actually quite disturbing. But I think what had happened is that the asylums, Larundel, Kew Cottages, etc., had been getting rid of mental patients out of the system. And so they just pushed out onto them. Many of them ended up on the streets. And it was quite disturbing. I hadn't just quite seen that sort of thing before. And I thought, these voices should be put out into the public arena somehow. Mm-hmm. And that's where it originally came from. We didn't, I mean, look, in the end, I was working with my partner Eva Schramm in those days, and also Christine Meering, who later became Ma Prem Sarabi. Now I'm getting lost, but ask me another question.
Okay. Well, actually, this was the original incarnation of TV Voodoo. The one that you're doing now, what's it based on? Because it's a little bit like Warhol's Screen Test, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. It's like Warhol's Screen Test in that I don't have much input into. It's not like I'm pushing, directing, conceiving, do this, you know, I'm not doing any, put somebody in a room. Where I've come to is the idea of asking somebody to make a personal disclosure to the camera.
That's right. And, dear listeners, I did one of those. I might not be included in the final product, but I did. Yes, you had a camera set up in the room.
Final product somewhere along the line, don't you worry.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I was put into a room in front of a camera with a stool and told to make some kind of disclosure. That's right.
Yes.
Which I did, but under the assumption that you weren't going to hear my disclosure because it's only a video, isn't it? And you're going to do a whole lot of post-production over the top. So
absolutely.
I suspect you did this to quite a few different people.
Yeah, I've done it with maybe 14, 15 people. Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of post-production that goes on over the top, of course, isn't there?
Yeah, that's where it's slightly different to the Warhol. Warhol would just sort of have a camera in a room, go in there and do whatever you like. You could sort of make love, go to sleep, recite a poem, shoot up, kind of whatever, you know. It's like that in that I'm not in the room, as you know. That's when Sally came in, we put her in the room. I leave the room, turn on the camera, do what you must, Sally. The idea being a sort of connection with eyeballing the camera means you're eyeballing from the TV to the viewer. So there's contact there. And because it's some sort of personal disclosure going on, there's a sense of intimacy that develops in the video itself. But because, let's say, it's back to Chin Chin's again, because there's no audio, audio gets wiped, and it was not dissimilar with the TV Voodoo things we did originally. So people are left to think, what is that person saying? Is it interesting? What are they on about? What's going on out there? So from there, get a dancer to try to translate the disclosure in some way or other in a dance form. Now, that's where Christine Meering, who is a sort of British ex-ballet dancer in the early 80s, this is Ma Prem Sarabi, she was sort of part of the sort of original production team, so she did all of the translations. It's been a little bit more complex this time because we've had a couple of young people from Dance North, Harrison Hall and Ashley McClellan, who had a little bit of time and thought, yeah, great, we'll just do them all. That'll be fantastic. But as it turned out, it was too big for them. And they went, oh, right, look, we'll do one each and then we must be off. Goodbye.
These things always turn out to be a lot more work than you think of when with the initial idea, don't they?
Yeah, they're tiny. It seems tiny. They're only like, they're sort of edited down to little three-minute pieces now. And I've probably got about 10 good to go for Chin Chins, and that's more than enough material. So I've got like 30 minutes of material, which will repeat.
Yes, and let's hope, of course, that the lines outside of Chin Chin don't last longer than that. Although I have visited there several times and been told that if I wanted to stay and wait for a meal, I could be there for 2 hours. It's very good food, clearly.
Yes.
So your piece is entitled TV Voodoo. Let me see the spelling of it again.
Yeah.
TEVE. Yes. VUDU.
Yeah.
Is on for the entire month of April, presumably every night. I'm going along to see it very soon.
Yes.
I'm quite excited about that. I think I'll make a link for it up on the Facebook page. But it's an exciting project, Gary. Thank you for telling us about it today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me back in again. It's great, always a pleasure.
Well, we need to drag you back in again, so we better talk about that after you've got this project under your belt.
Okay.
Fabulous. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sally. Bye.
Bye-bye, Gary. Cliff Ellen is in the building once again to present us with another serve of his special recipe of rye critique and his view from the cliff. Good morning, Cliff.
Good
Ellen.
Morning, Sally. What a pleasure to be here. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Cliff. Nice to see you.
He's appeared.
He has.
About time. We were lost. We had to put up with swine.
I know. We had weeks of it, didn't we?
Yes. Truth. Useless.
And I could, of course, claim that the reason I've been away for those 3 weeks is because I've been busy doing all sorts of John things, Cliff. But you know what? I haven't. I've been laying around doing nothing.
Just have you worked
behaving like a tourist.
While you were laying around, obviously you were thinking, you were meditating.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. So have you decided what art is about?
Well, that's not necessarily what I was reflecting on, but would you like to know what art is about, Cliff?
Yeah, I would.
Well, I'm not sure that we've got enough time left in the show to really get into that, but art is essentially about sincerity, I think.
Right. You've shortchanged the answer.
that's the very brief answer to that question.
No, I think.
Good art is about
sincerity. I'd finish up with finding out about yourself, sort of.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Self-discovery,
like
yeah.
It's worth a bit of thought. It just occurred to me on the spot.
You might learn a bit more about that when you undertake the making of a painting, Cliff.
John's been encouraging Cliff to paint.
I like pictures.
Yes.
Yes.
Pictures of, give me a picture of my house when it was first built in Northcote or Westcote back in the 1920s, and then give me another picture of what it is now, and I'll put them together and make them big, and I'd like something like that.
But, you mean photographs, don't you?
Yeah, I like photographs, yeah.
Sort of bookends of a historical period, aren't they?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. But at my age of day, you look back a bit because what have you got to look forward to? Anyway, who's appearing? Oh, Glenn Nicholas has opened somewhere in the old George's spot in Fitzroy Street, St Kilda.
Oh, doing what?
Well, it's a show and it's about the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh.
Opened last Thursday, and Glenn speaks glowingly about the show.
Glenn does,
almost
does he?
As glowingly as he speaks about himself.
Really?
Whether you want to go and see it is up to you.
Okay.
Shakespeare's 400th anniversary.
Yes.
Isn't that lovely?
Yes. Well, I've been calling it his birthday, but in fact, of course, it's not his birthday. It's the day that he died.
It's his own personal
it's the
Easter.
Anniversary, yes. That's right. 23rd of April. At Stratford-upon-Avon. Are you going? It's a big
No, night. No, I really... I,
well, I
would
know
love
you
to
travel
have gone
the
over,
world.
Yeah, no, I'd love to have been in London this year to see some of the stuff that's going on there.
They've got a traditional New Orleans jazz band procession staged by the School of Liberal Arts of Tulane University.
Mm-hmm.
Live street entertainment. Why am I saying all this? Oh, I don't know. I just thought you know, we've all got to worship William.
And, of course, there's the new, Emma Rice, the new artistic director of the Globe Theatre, has her production of Midsummer Night's Dream opening for this year, for this event. I think it's for this event. And our fabulous, fabulous Meow Meow is playing Queen Titania.
Well, supposedly it's a year of celebrations around the world, from Albania to Vietnam. Performances, exhibitions, activities, from death scene competitions to Shakespeare's karaoke to open mic sonnet nights. Cut to Australia and you'll hear crickets.
I wonder what Billy Shakespeare would have thought of a New Orleans jazz band.
I think he would have liked it. He's a very creative person. He knows quite a bit about the arts and what art is about. So on.
And he knows quite a lot about the human condition too.
Mm. Well, finishing up, Sydney Shakespeare scholar and director Anna Camarali is in Britain this month, where the anniversary is a big event. I keep speaking to scholars over on this side of the world and they'll say I'm so over it if I see one more Shakespeare 400 event. And, of course, I'm going, you have no idea how lucky you are, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we won't talk about that too much because, I'm not a great fan. I've seen about, a dozen Shakespeare plays.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them I've enjoyed and the rest of them I fell asleep.
Oh.
But okay. As I've said before, I like reading his scripts.
You prefer to read them?
Hmm.
Hmm.
But what have we got? We've got
So what else have you been doing?
I can keep talking on Shakespeare quite a bit.
No, let's not. Let's move on to something else. We're running out of time.
Porno.
Oh, yes. I'm dying to see this.
In cinemas, opening April the 21st.
That's Porno, P-A-W-N-O, by the way, everybody.
I'm mentioning it because a friend of mine is in it.
Yes, we know a few.
John, I've forgotten his last name. He generally plays criminals. But apparently it's funny, smart and surprising. It's a ripper, says great actor Mick Molloy.
Oh.
Well, he'd know, wouldn't he?
Yes.
He talks a load of rubbish most of the time.
Damien Hill's in it as well, and it's John. I know who I'm looking at his face. I can't remember what.
It's a film by Paul Ireland.
Yes.
It's a gritty, multicultural suburb of Footscray.
Kerry Armstrong's in it momentarily as well.
Yeah, I saw that, which put me off a bit. But apart from that, it's quite a good cast, you know. It's warm-hearted, witty narrative that examines the intersecting stories of 14 local characters and their resident pawnbroker. The cast, Damien Hill.
John Brumpton,
of course, from Rumpa Stomper.
Yeah.
Kerry Armstrong from some film called Lantana.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yep.
That was all right. She's quite good in that. And Tony Rickards, of course, from Holding the Man, alongside rising talent Maeve Dermody, who did something, Griff the Invisible or something, and Mark Colesmith. Look, it's worth going to see. There's one other thing I want to say, because I said last week, I'm going to think of something smart to say every week.
Yeah, oh yeah.
For me. Oh, I'm in a bad mood today. Listeners.
Yeah, I can tell. He's got a bit of a nasty streak.
If I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. One more thing before you cut me off.
Yeah, all right.
Celia Pequala.
Yeah.
She's at the Comedy Theatre. I think it finishes soon, probably in about 3 or 4 nights.
Yeah.
Celia's from Ex-Utopia, where she's very good. She was also in The Brilliant Lies, where she was up and down like a yo-yo, but some of it was good.
Yeah.
Dramatic acting. And she's doing comedy there. I've seen her do it before. She's got a bit to learn, but she got good reviews from a woman reviewer. But look, she's probably worth having a look at if anybody wants to be silly enough to go to comedy festival.
Fantastic. Hey, what are you doing for the rest of the afternoon?
I've got a lot of things on today.
Have you?
Yes, I think I'll watch Collingwood. They won by a point last week, so I'll watch that last quarter again. That'll excite me.
Before you go out and look for a pitcher.
I would, but I've got to go to the RSL, John. But look, it's lovely to have you back.
Got a song? Oh,
thank you, Cliff.
Well, I did have a song, but I don't know if you've got it.
Yeah, I do have it. It's Si Tu Vois Ma Mère, which I think
by Sidney Beckett.
Which I think is If You See My Mother. It's going to be unlikely, isn't
it? It's Woody Allen's sing from the Paris film.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Thanks, Cliff. Great
All
to see
best.
You. Bye.
Have a good week, kids. Bye.
See you, Cliff.
It's time for the news.
Yeah, cheerfully.
It time is, for isn't the news. It? Very. Yeah. The Merry Wives of Windsor are on at 45 Downstairs, 19th of April. Get on to the 45 Downstairs website to book your tickets.
Art Town's on in Paran. Yeah. Last day today.
Last day, exactly.
What's Art Town? I've been away.
You've been away, yeah. Listen to last week's show, John.
Right.
Yeah. Multi-award-winning writer David Hare will join Julian Burnside to talk politics, public institutions, art and the writing life on Sunday the 1st of May at South Bank Theatre, presented by MTC and the Wheeler Centre. I'm sure if you go to the MTC website you'll hear more about it. I think it's a rare opportunity to hear from the playwright of Skylight, which is coming up there soon.
Yeah. Something else I haven't noticed because I've been away is Mike Nichols. Ooh. On at the Merrick's General Store.
Yes, that's very good, John. Perhaps you should go down there and have
I'm
a look.
I'm going to go and have a look. Mike Nichols, I happen to know, is a man of great skill.
Yes.
And considerable clout.
Yeah, absolutely. I interviewed him down there at the gallery, and we had that on the show. Yes, his work there is terrific.
I look forward to seeing
I'd recommend
that.
Anyone to go and see it. Merrick's General Art Store until April the 25th. Oh, are we there? No, we aren't there. We've still got a couple of weeks left. TV Voodoo is on in Flinders Lane for the month of April, just outside Chin Chin. Go and stand in a queue and or actually go and have dinner and have a look.
You don't have to end up having dinner, do you?
No, you don't. You could just go there, walk past and have a look. Yeah.
Get a free look at a Gary Willis.
Yeah, exactly. So, everybody, if you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. But you can catch up on the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime. The show's also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12 after Secrets to Health with Angela Jacobson. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Please join us again 11 o'clock next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
We do know what we like.
We do know what we like, John. Yes. That's right.
Grayson Perry, that's what we like.
We certainly like him. I'd go back there any day. Mm.